This is Nairametrics Economic Roundup.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Economic Roundup, and I am Adetayo Adeshola, and I'm with Loretta Egba, the Senior Financial Analyst and Writer at Nairametrics. Basically, the biggest news that happened this week was the federal government easing the lockdown in Lagos State, Ogun State, and the Federal Capital Territory. It was met with some kind of excitement and also a lot of crazy long queues in the banks, and you know, everybody's wondering why the ban was even lifted. And so we are just basically going to be discussing how this is going to affect long-term the coronavirus, the Nigerian economy, if the federal government made the right decision, and where do we go from here basically as a country, and especially people in Lagos State who have to deal with a lot of people. Lagos State is already jam-packed already, and this virus is spreading like wildfire. And so Loretta basically will be discussing all these things, and we'll try and trash it all out. So Loretta, how are you?
Hi Adetayo, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, nice to finally meet you.
I know. So COVID-19.
Yeah.
You know what, I keep telling my friends that when we got into 2020, we had all these dreams and aspirations, you know, 2020 is my year, I'm going to make all this happen. We didn't see COVID-19 coming, and it's not a Nigerian thing. Nobody in any part of the world
caught us all by surprise.
Yes, nobody saw it. Didn't plan it, but it is something we have to come to terms with. It's unprecedented, but we have to face it.
Yeah.
And the idea, well, COVID-19, I'm sure everybody understands what COVID-19 is, but the concept is
coronavirus.
As much as you can avoid getting it, so in order to avoid getting it, you need to avoid touching contaminated surfaces or meeting people who have it.
Yeah.
And since nobody has it on their forehead, I have coronavirus.
Yeah.
The best way is to avoid people from you know, interacting with other carriers.
Yeah.
So since the issue came out to the fore, so many countries have put down systems so as to mitigate the challenges of the virus.
Yeah.
And one of the most acceptable ways, and kind of the smartest way, is, you know, everybody just go inside, stay indoors, social distancing, and that's where we are. And this is what has brought, you know, the different challenges we are facing right now across the world.
Yeah, back to what you said, actually, because everyone now is on lockdown. There are very few countries that have even eased lockdown. Although in America, they are doing it states. Different states have different laws. And, you know, it's the only way they can, as you said, it's the only way we can battle the virus, because there's no cure, there's no vaccine. We don't even know when any of those things are coming. You know, so it might take maybe the world. I believe the world will never remain the same until we get a vaccine. And even the vaccine, see how long it took people to even do polio vaccine. So that will even take a lot of time. So, you know, but the lockdown also has its own effects, because it shuts down the economy. Basically, people are not going to work. Economic activities, GDP is dropping. Nigeria, our GDP, they say, is going to go by like over 8%. It's going to contract by over 8%. And we are even with this oil crisis too, because there's no demand for oil. So, you know, do you want to tell us more about the economic importance or the economic impact, rather, of the COVID-19 and the lockdown it has caused globally and in Nigeria more specifically?
Okay. So let me backtrack a little for one of the reasons we have to stay indoors. The reason we have to stay indoors is because it is hard for the government to carry out tests to know who has it and who doesn't have it. And across the world, the country that has carried out the most tests is Iceland, and they have been able to test only 10% of the entire population. So this is not just a Nigerian thing. The pandemic brings to the fore so many issues. It brings to the fore our housing deficit, because if you have 30 people in one house, which is a reality in many parts of Lagos, as far as I know, because I stay in Lagos, there's the housing deficit, there's the power issues, because if you're going to be at home and you're going to have to work from home, you need power.
Yeah.
The infrastructural deficits, like, you know, good healthcare. We have to also come to terms with the internet, you know, poor financial systems, and so on. And for many of the big economies, what they have done is, in order to mitigate the economic implication that will arise from people staying at home, they came up with all these
packages,
you know, to help people in Australia. They are giving money. You know, sometimes when I see this, I want to travel, I want to relocate, so I can see that about the government will feed me.
And you.
Yeah, but the truth is, an economy cannot survive solely on socialism.
Yeah.
Social welfare is only sustainable in the short term. And for an economy like Nigeria that isn't, you know, isn't so strong,
yeah,
it is natural that we are going to take even more hits. There's this video I saw on Instagram of this woman, it's a couple of people actually in worry. They're talking about how, and the people that have the virus are rich people. We don't get virus, so
let us
go and eat, because it is the fact that we are not eating that is going to kill us.
Yeah,
not
the starvation.
The virus. It's starvation that will kill us.
Yeah, go on.
So yeah, the economic implication comes in two forms. There's a direct implication that comes from basically telling people to sit at home.
Yeah.
The Nigerian Bureau of Statistics places the contribution of the informal sector at 41%. So with 41% of the informal sector being made to stay at home, I mean, let's not even go into the already existing unemployment stats we have.
Mm.
Job loss is only imminent. It's unavoidable. So the first issue is the direct side, you know, the implication from people that have to shut down operations, the clubs, all the other big organizations that have to deal with so many people, entertainment industry, the tourism industry, these industries are going to really suffer, and they have started suffering. I saw that Eco Hotel has started delivering. Eco Hotel did not come up to start delivering food. You know, it is just they have to cope with, you know, the changing times.
Yeah.
In the United States, we have had, just in April, they've had over 22 million job losses. In Nigeria, we do not do so much, we do not do so well in terms of keeping data, but we know that people have, you know,
lost their jobs.
People have lost their jobs.
Even some banks laying off, etc.
Yeah. Then on the other hand is the the indirect implication, which comes from our affiliation with other economies. People who are over reliance on importation, as it has hamstrung so many businesses.
Yeah.
So organizations or companies who need input from people from nations across the world have had to stop. So on the basis of this, so many countries have food systems, and Nigeria has also done so. But knowing that they cannot sustainably take care of everybody, which is why the government came up with, you know, well, let's just get back outside. But as long as, you know, just cover your nose and, you know, let's see how we can make it happen. Unfortunately, given our population, given the kind of people we are, just looking at the amount of queues we have in banks, it is clear that this also has long-term effects.
And Loretta, that's where I disagree with you, because I feel like, you know, just judging from history, right? When you have a lockdown like we've had, because the truth is that this virus is not new. The whole humankind has been plagued with pandemics, plagues, etc. But when you ease the lockdown too early, because especially when you have not met the criteria to ease the lockdown, it causes even the second wave, which is even always more deadly, more disastrous. You understand? And just seeing those queues, I saw one guy that collapsed at one bank, you know, and so many other things, you know, and the queues and the way people are interacting. And especially because even many Nigerians are, you know, don't have the adequate information about best practices for social distancing. So it's just, we're just setting ourselves up for disaster. And also with the fact that even the government doesn't have the capabilities to test as well as we should. I think maybe the last figure that I saw maybe in April, early April, was that we could maybe, to our fullest capacity, we could test like 1,000 people. I don't know if you do the maths, how long it will take for us to test everyone.
It's going to take years.
Yeah, but you know, then, but this is why I feel like the government, but they had to do it because people were starving, as you mentioned. Yeah. But this is why I feel like the government should have given relief packages substantially to people that are living hand to mouth. That's just my own thoughts on that. I feel like we should still be in lockdown.
It's easy for you to say, because I'm sure you have, your organization has been able to shift to letting you work from home and then you get paid. It's pretty straightforward. So what it has done is that for organizations that can move to the, you know, which is the future of work, to the online space, to digital space, they have been able to find a way around it. And that doesn't necessarily reduce economic challenges, isn't it? Especially because now you see you need less staff, you know, to get work done.
So people have to downsize.
On one hand, it reduces overhead costs in terms of, you know, your organization. You don't need to pay for lights. You don't need to pay for the internet costs in the office. But at home, you have to deal with, you know. So it's really wide.
Yeah.
But it's easy for those of us who can earn from home to say that, let's just stay at home. For people whose livelihood depend on them being outside, being able to trade or being able to, you know, whatever it is, you know, people do outside when they're working. For them, it is, you know, we stayed for 1 week, then we stayed for another week, then we stayed for another week. How long are we going to stay? And then you're looking at your wife and you're looking at your children and they're hungry and you're like, I need to go outside. It is not... And to be honest, if you try to do the math, the risk of the economic implication is higher than the risk of the virus contamination. Yes, unfortunately. So it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's not something that even the government... No, but I don't think there's any government that particularly knows how to figure it out. Because now you say everybody should stay at home and let the packages get there. Don't forget, we still have to deal with things like greed, knowing that, you know, these things will not get to everybody.
Yeah.
Then somebody was complaining that they gave us one derica of rice and it gave us, you know, this. So how much can the government really do by themselves without the capital?
Yeah, Loretta, I get your point actually. But this is why I say that, you know, you have to meet certain criteria before you say you want to ease a lockdown. There's like a checklist. You can even, there's an article on Aerometrics about the WHO's checklist of things that you need to, you know, get done as a country before you decide to ease a lockdown. But now we're just basically in a limbo. Like, we're just, okay, man, just, I don't think there's an overall strategy. Like, I don't think it's a careless easing of lockdown. But I won't say it's particularly a smart lockdown. I mean, smart easing of the lockdown. Do you understand? Because now, for example, in Croatia, they have been able to, you know, reduce the curve. In fact, they have been like maybe if not the best performing country in terms of managing the coronavirus, and that was because they acted early because they got information from Taiwan. So what they do now is when you have the coronavirus, the government requests that they track your phone, and so they have like an application whereby they can, you know, monitor people that are interacting with. But also, we don't even have that to even a comprehensive or even a basic. We don't have any application. I don't know of any application that we have that can monitor and check all the cases, people that are interacting, even people that have recovered. You understand? Because in China too, they said there's a 5-15% chance that people that recovered from coronavirus are going to get it back.
Yeah.
So we are just basically just, you know, we are just vibing basically.
No, I definitely
we're working
agree.
On vibes.
Yeah. I definitely agree that it was a little too abrupt.
Yeah.
There should have been certain systems and structures in place, knowing that our population is, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, our population
so
is
So knowing
heavy.
That the moment you tell everybody to go, just that Monday morning, there was already traffic.
Yeah.
There was traffic everywhere. I assumed that people were going to be like me and say,
I'm
not going to go anywhere. But there was traffic. We were complaining. I had a friend that was going from Mikorodu to VI, and there was traffic throughout. You know, it's not something... It's not something the government knows how to deal with particularly. It's not something anybody knows how to deal with.
Yeah.
For them, it is how best can we deal with this situation?
Yeah.
How best can we come out of it?
Mm.
And even though isn't the lot, I believe we need to go back inside, in all honesty. But it is not something we can just put our foot down on that, okay, what the government did here was wrong or what they did was right. It is, you know, what is the best possible solution? And we are basically just trying things out.
Yeah, I'll also commend the NCDC and, you know, NCDC, sorry, for, you know, for their work so far. And, you know, they have been trying, you know, and, you know, we hope that things get better. There's a cure and a vaccine for this virus. And, you know, we get our lives back to normal.
I really want my life to get back to normal.
Yeah, but maybe projections saying maybe sometime in 2021.
That's scary.
Yeah,
that's
scary. It's a long time, but you know, I think it's something that things will not be. And I also commend the government for, they didn't just ease the lockdown in a way like, okay, you guys, business as usual, but you know, churches are still closed, you know, they have strict hours, there's curfew,
yeah,
there's more public health and safety.
Though, that's even another angle.
And well, let's just leave that discussion. But yeah, because we're running out of time. So Loretta, you wrote an article on Arometrics on how our pensions are worthless. So basically, everybody that's been saving money, they are not making any money. Or can you just tell us more about that article and, you know, what's the insights that you got from your research?
Okay, for context, it is worth spaceless. Yeah. Meaning, not like it's worthless, it is that it's just worth less than you expect. The idea of having a pension in the first place is that when I'm older, if things don't work out, if I don't become a billionaire by the time I'm 45, I have something to fall back on that will keep me and my family for, you know, a certain period.
Yeah.
And by the time you give your money to this pension, you know, authorities, they are supposed to invest your money in lucrative ways in order for your money to, one, most importantly, be safe.
Yeah.
Next, be able to rise above inflationary pressures. And yeah, then if you're also lucky, you get interest on it. Which, yeah, that's the ideal yeah, thing, which is how the 401k in the US, the Roth IRA, yeah, works. The challenge, yeah, so the research I had carried out then was I looked at the funds, the two major funds we have by the National Pension Commission. So the, yeah, National Pension Commission manages the pension space in Nigeria,
yeah,
and what they do is that they put systems in place to ensure that, you know, your funds are invested,
yeah,
properly by the pension fund administrators. So the pension fund contributors are your organizations, and you give your money to the pension fund administrators who invest it for you. What they had done initially before 2018, there were two main funds, the RSA active funds and the retiree funds. And my understanding of the active fund is, you know, this is where more people who can take risk can invest in. And the retiree funds are, you know, when you're 25, it's easy to invest in something that's high risk. But when, yeah, you're 50, you know, you want to invest in something that basically just keeps, yeah, your money safe.
Yeah.
However, even at that, so aside those two funds, we later divided into three funds that spread it according to riskiness.
Yeah.
But even at that, people are, or these administrators are investing in low risk assets. So we're thinking of federal government bonds, treasury bills, and all of that. So what I did was I carried analysis to see how much return these funds have been making for the past 10 years. And I carried out an average on that. Then also did an average on inflation.
Yeah.
And then you realize that your money is barely racing against inflation.
Yeah.
And with the new, with the monetary policies, with the devaluation, with all of the things happening right now, your money is depleting because you're not investing in things that can yield more interest.
So,
but yeah, you should totally go and read the article. Yeah. So I don't end up explaining.
So basically, you're saying it's even worth less than you actually, even when you got the money, it's worth less than you actually had,
yes,
back then.
Yes, because inflation is reducing the value.
Oh, wow.
At the end of the day.
So you guys, so what's, before we finally go, what's your advice for people that are saving money with the pension fund?
I don't want any pension fund to come and carry me, but I guess it's the onus falls on the administrators to, yeah, make better investments. It's, mm, it's pretty, that's the idea. Just make better investments, be able to take more calculated risk.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that investing in treasury bills and, you know, safe assets are, they do well to
secure
your money up until a level, yeah, where inflation, devaluation and all other bad things in the economy, you know, cannot save you from.
Yeah.
So you need to make better decisions in terms of what you're investing the funds in. Okay. That's all.
Thank you so much, Loretta. It was good having you here. And thank you, our listeners, too.
Thank you. Sanitize. Everybody. Sanitize. Everybody. Sanitize. Everybody.